On the line now we have Shailianne Somerville of the Scottish National Party, member of the Scottish Parliament. Good afternoon, Shailianne.
Good afternoon.
Are you enjoying the weather this afternoon at all? Have you been outside at all?
No, I can see a tiny bit of blue sky from my window, which is all I'll be getting until later tonight. So, it's not snowing, I'll settle for that.
That's true, there's no rain either, which is great. Okay, well, we have a series of questions for you, and we'll start with the first one. You're currently building up to the campaign for the May election. What are you doing at the moment?
Well, it's a continuation, really, of the work I've been doing since I got elected in 2007, really, trying to get out to speak to as many people as possible, making sure that I know what their issues are, what's concerning them, so I can do my best to try and represent them. There's obviously big issues going on, whether it's the trams or the biomass and so on, but they're just a lot of, you know, individual cases which we pick up on a day-by-day basis. That's obviously going to change slightly when Parliament dissolves and we're out fully on the campaign trail.
Sure.
But it really is a matter for me of getting out to speak to as many people as possible and probably more importantly, listen to them at the same time.
Are you working on the manifesto at the moment?
Yeah, the manifesto has been well underway for some time now. I've been quite fortunate because I'm one of the parliamentary aides to the Finance Secretary, John Swinney, that I was in the start of the manifesto development way back in last summer when we started to hold meetings with organisations like Friends of the Earth, WWF Scotland and so on, to find out about what their priorities are, to make sure that we're listening to some of the organisations, particularly in environmental issues, which is a focus for me. And that started the process off. Now it's in the hands of the party leadership, and we'll see that get published in as soon as the actual campaign starts proper once Parliament dissolves.
Okay, we'll go on to the next question, and this will be from Carol, my colleague on the show here.
Hello, Shailianne.
Hi there.
Now, you're standing against the sitting MSP for the area, Malcolm Chisholm. I gather he's the co-convener with yourself on the Parliament's Climate Change Committee.
Yes, we do. We work very well together on that committee.
So, if you get on well working on the committee together, is it a problem competing against a colleague in this way?
It's a strange situation, but I think it's actually quite a welcome one, because at least I certainly hope that we can have a debate about what we want to see happening in Leith, in maybe a more positive manner than what goes on sometimes in politics. And I don't think that benefits either the political parties or the voters, really. I get on personally with Malcolm. What makes it very easy for me, however, to continue to campaign against him is, give you one example, that the Scottish Budget had a piece in it, which was passed yesterday, to freeze the council tax for the fourth year in succession. Now, Malcolm actually voted against that, not just yesterday, but a couple of weeks ago in the Finance Committee as well. So when you have a direct comparison about whether you have an SNP MSP that believes that the council tax should be frozen, or a Labour MSP who actually wants to see people's council tax go up, then that certainly focuses my mind to get away from the personal relationship that we may have built up, but actually, you know, what type of future, you know, Edinburgh Leith would have with either an SNP or a Labour MSP. But I think people expect, or certainly would hope, that politicians from political parties can work together in areas that they agree with. I think that's mature politics. But we differ on many issues, the council tax freeze just being one of them.
So do you think this will make for a more civilised debate then, rather than, you know, sometimes you do see personal, particularly in FMQ and so on, we do see a few personal attacks, and I think it doesn't do politics, it does politics a disservice, doesn't it?
No, I've just sat
away from issues.
FMQ's First Minister's questions there, and I was sitting three rows back from the First Minister, and did not hear a word he said for the vast majority of it because of the heckling from the Labour benches in particular. Now, if you have to have a First Minister having to literally shout to be heard, and even then somebody who's sitting directly behind him can't hear him, I don't think that does the Parliament any favours.
No.
Certainly no. We just had a constituent in who was actually seeing FMQ's, First Minister's questions, for the first time within the chamber, And he found it very surprising that a lot of the Labour backbenchers were allowed to get away with the amount of heckling that they did, mm-hmm. because it just made it absolutely impossible for a civilised debate to continue. And I think that lowers the tone of any mm-hmm. debate. So I hope that that doesn't happen within the local area, but it's the responsibility of the candidate to make sure that it doesn't.
Sure. We'll see what happens at hustings. So, do you think the SNP will benefit from a disillusionment at the decisions made by the UK coalition government and the public cuts?
I think that it's really up to us to tell the people of every seat what our vision is for Scotland. People voted for the Tories, but particularly the Liberal Democrats, in seats like Edinburgh because they thought the Liberal Democrats would deliver something different. And they understandably feel let down from that because they voted in good faith in Westminster. So I think we might see people, you know, looking to see, still having that belief that they want to see change, that they want to see something different than what Westminster's doing, but maybe realising that, you know, the Liberal Democrats doesn't do that for them anymore. They wanted it. They wanted the Lib Dems to do that, and that hasn't came to fruition. But what we'll do is stand on our record of government and stand on our vision for the future of Scotland and try and let the people decide about who they want to see as First Minister. And I'm very happy, very proud to stand on the opportunity to have Alex Salmond as our First Minister. I think he's the only credible candidate that is out there.
Sure. You joined the SNP yourself at the age of 16. How do you propose to appeal to younger first-time voters?
Yes, I still try to pretend that I'm young, although my assistant who works for me does remind me that I am now middle-aged and old. But there is still an issue of people leaving school and not feeling that politics is for them. Mm-hmm. And I certainly got involved in politics at a very young age because I was brought up with this idea that if you think things aren't as they should be, if you think that, you know, you deserve better, your community deserves better, well, don't just complain about it, go out and do something about it. Mm-hmm. That's why I got involved. Now, a lot of people, the vast majority of people, don't want to get involved in politics like I do. If they want to see something different happening, if they want to see more housing in Leith, more affordable housing, that is, not just the penthouses, but a change to the way that we run our country, then I'm afraid voting is one of the few ways that people can do that. So, as I said before, this Scottish Parliament elections will have a big impact on people's lives. You know, you will have issues like the SNP's commitment to free prescriptions carrying on. You will have aspects of the 5,000 houses that we've pledged, council houses that we've pledged to build after the next election. Those are the issues that I want to see forward and campaigning on. And I hope they do appeal to young people, but we've got to do it a bit different as well.
Yeah, do you think we need to modernise the voting system a little bit?
We do need to modernise the voting system, but not just the voting system, because I don't think people will come out and vote if you haven't spoken to them during the intervening period.
Yeah.
And just before, actually, we went online, I was updating my... I was tweeting to say that I was going on Leith FM. Mm-hmm. I just updated my Facebook to say that I was on Leith FM. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are different ways that we speak to people rather than just stuffing envelopes and putting leaflets through their doors. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't just appeal to young people, but we just need to be a bit better at communicating. You know, politicians need to get a bit better at actually communicating to people.
Right.
And not just, you know, public meetings in drafty church halls, but actually going out and speaking to people in different ways. And I understand that everybody's into Twitter and things like that, but there's a lot of people who are, and I'm personally getting quite addicted to it. So, you know, there are things like that which we can do to try and just do things a bit different and reach out to people. I don't think changing the way people vote will really change that much, because if you haven't, as I say, if you haven't tried to speak to that person over the intervening 4 years, then you're not going to get them.
No.
Vote, even if it's just as simple as a click of the mouse if we went to electronic voting or anything like that.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next question, and this is from Carol.
Miss Shirley Ann, you're encouraging Leith residents at the moment to have their say on Forth Energy's controversial proposals for a biomass plant at Leith Docks.
Yep.
Now, the company lodged a consent application with the government last week, and the consultation closes in March. You've called for a moratorium on all such plans in Scotland. If you're elected to the seat, how will you continue your campaign against this?
Well, there's a very important aspect just now, which I'll deal with first, if you don't mind, about encouraging people to get involved now, never mind after the election, for people
for
to lodge their objections, their comments.
Right.
If somebody is out there that's actually for this, and I haven't met many, feel free to put them as well. But for the objections to be lodged, so it's important that people actually get that in and have their voice heard. After that, it will take a while for these to go through the planning process, and that's where we then really need to look at the longer-term aspects of this, about whether there's enough information out there to allow ministers to be able to take a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of scientific evidence that's coming out that's really showing that biomass is not this clean, green revolution that Forth Energy are making it out to be. And that's why I'm calling on a moratorium to somebody independent can look at all this scientific advice, because one scientific study doesn't change the world.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody needs to look at this and actually advise on whether this is the right way forward or not. And I don't believe that it is. Now, it may be that it's not needed for Leith in particular, because I think that the plans for Leith are so wrong that, regardless of any of the scientific aspects of it, this is just simply the wrong site with the wrong scale of plant in completely the wrong place and utterly the wrong proposal, that actually we don't need to get into the technical scientific details of it. I hope that's the case, but if any minister needs any persuasion of it, then this independent research will help.
The NHS Lothian have voiced concern as well, haven't they, about the health aspects?
Well, there have been a number of health boards that have voiced concerns, or are at very least looking for more clarification on aspects. And I think that's the worrying thing for me. If we can't have a clean bill of health given by NHS Lothian or NHS Tayside for the plant that's coming out in Dundee, then we really do need to take a step back and think, is this really the best way forward? If you can't get a clean yes or no answer to whether this is safe in terms of emissions and so on. So there's a lot of concerns, not just about it not being green, not just because people don't think it's the right scale, but on health aspects as well. There's so many ways that this is actually wrong that it's difficult to actually pick out, a couple to talk about. There's there's so many aspects to this that is troubling.
So you'd urge people to get their responses in. Is there a closing date? We've got the closing date.
The closing date is 11th of March.
Exactly.
People do need to get something in, and there's ways of doing that where they can get help. I'd advise anybody that has a keen interest in this to go to the Greener Leith website. They've got a lot of brilliant information up there that will help people with that process of getting their comments in. So if people are wanting to have their say but still a bit unsure about how to do that, all the information is there on the Greener Leith website, and people could try and go there and have a look at it.
As you'll be aware, the City Council vote today on their budget, and that includes a package of education cuts, which, if it goes through, will hit the city schools very hard. Now, I have to admit to a vested interest in this. I've got one child at secondary school and one just finishing primary school this year, and we've sort of been informed about the kind of changes that are likely to hit our local schools if this goes through. Now, I wrote to my four local councillors to voice my opposition to the cuts, and one of them, I'm not if I'm allowed to say which party am I, Tristan?
Yeah, you kind of feel
that. A Tory councillor replied, we need to balance what are sometimes conflicting priorities within what is a very difficult financial situation this year. And I also heard Jenny Dawes, leader of the council, this morning on the radio saying that they were going to prioritise key services, and that included children and education. Well, from what I've seen, if this budget does go through, the schools are going to be hit hard. Now, the SNP says that economic growth is its main priority, and surely a well-educated workforce is the bedrock of this. As a parent yourself, what do you think the Parliament can do to protect our children's educational futures?
Well, it is. Education is an aspect which is the responsibility of local councils to deliver. And I appreciate, you know, as a parent myself, I appreciate that getting an email through talking about tough economic times and decisions have to be made and balanced budget really doesn't deal with that worry that people have about their own children's future. Yes, it might be all true, but when you're sitting there trying to work out what's going to happen to your child, it doesn't really help move the debate on. So I can appreciate why you felt that really didn't deal with your concerns.
I think there's a standard answer, to be honest. I mean,
yes,
yeah,
possibly.
And while I do appreciate, it does seem to be a bit of a get out by the Parliament. They always say, it's local authority, it's local authority. But
yeah.
I guess the local authority can only work with the package of money that the funding that they're given. I'm not underestimating the task that lies ahead of them and trying to prioritise. And of course, everybody thinks that the service they receive, whether they're a child or an old person or whatever, or getting their bins collected, or whatever, it's equally important to them. But I do think, even though it's local authorities' responsibility, the SNP are saying economic growth is a priority, and you know, Scotland has always been renowned in history for its education system, and to me, as a parent, that seems to be being decimated at the moment. And we're also facing these cuts at a time when the schools are trying to tackle a new curriculum, they're trying to tackle the new national exams, and there's, you know, that's a controversial subject in itself because you know, the detail isn't quite in place for those.
Yeah.
So, you know, schools are being cut to the bone. So many cuts, and I don't think it's good enough really for the Parliament to sort of wash their hands of it and say, oh, it's up to local authorities, because this affects the whole country's future.
No, and I fully appreciate that, and I'm sorry that it came over, I was passing.
No, not at all, not at all.
I certainly won't try and promise anything that I can't deliver on, so, you know, what will happen within the schools of Edinburgh will be a decision taken by the councillors.
Yes,
one
appreciate.
I will be held responsible for by mums and dads in Edinburgh when it comes to me, regardless of the niceties
yeah.
of it. So, yes, you're right, that there has to be a vision for our education system as a whole nationally. And I think we have done a lot to improve the education system in Scotland with the curriculum for excellence, with trying to deliver smaller class sizes, which we've succeeded in doing, not by as much as we would have liked, I readily admit, but we are seeing that happen. So we have a national context of a Cabinet Secretary who is very keen to see Scotland have the type of education system that I think we all believe that we had at one time, where, you know, our education system was one of the best in the world. There are decisions that will be taken at council level about individual budgets and the difficulties that they will have in making those decisions, and it will lead parents to have concerns about their local primary school or their local secondary school. What I've had in discussions with my councillors is very much a commitment that they will try to protect school budgets as much as possible, particularly the devolved budgets to particular schools in itself, although they are, I readily admit, looking to try and save money in other ways, particularly administration at Waverley Court. Mm-hmm. So you've got all the way from the local decision about trying to protect the budget for a particular school, all the way up to the national government looking at a different way of teaching to try and get a more cohesive curriculum put together, mm-hmm. reducing class sizes within the early years. So there is a national framework there. It will have to be delivered by local councils, mm-hmm. and I think that's the right way. I would hate to see too much central control in that, but it obviously has to be based in a national mm-hmm. context. And I think we've had a government who has done what it can to try and show a type of different way of mm-hmm. Learning in Scotland that still has that vision.
And getting back to Edinburgh in particular, and I heard on the radio, I presume this is correct, they said Edinburgh actually spends proportionally the least on education of all the authorities in Scotland, and I suspect that's partly because we've got the highest number of children that go to private schools, so 25%. So when you take them out of the equation, you know, the council then has a lesser, I mean, that's a separate issue altogether, one for another day, but you know, it means that there's a lesser number of children that they're funding. You know, they're talking about conflicting priorities. There's consultation, which I believe is just finished, on provision of a Gaelic school.
It's continuing.
But provision of a Gaelic school in Edinburgh, and there's been costings of possibly having a second unit at Leithwalk Primary or upgrading Toll Cross, where the Gaelic unit is at the moment, or possibly refurbishing Bonnington Primary. I know the SNP would be a staunch defender of the Gaelic language, but I think probably a lot of parents would maybe prefer to see that money being spent in a wider context, maybe trying to reach a wider audience, you know, providing music, dance, that kind of thing. I mean, my daughter does Highland Dance at her primary school, which is actually an after-school activity that a parent set up. It's not actually organised by the school, albeit they let us use the premises. But, I mean, that's a great way of introducing Highland Dance. It's been very popular. It's been, you know, some of them have hopefully will be on, you know, keep on beyond school. And that's of no cost at all to local authority, because the parents, you know, the teacher comes in and the parents then pay that separately. And to my mind, surely that money could be better spent across the whole schools in Scotland and in Edinburgh rather than just concentrating on providing it for a very small minority of people.
And I think that really does come down to the crux of it. I think you mentioned earlier on when we were speaking on another subject that everyone always says that their issue that they're passionate about is the most important issue. I've had a number of emails in from parents concerned about education in Edinburgh. I've also had a number of emails in saying we need a better provision for Gaelic within Edinburgh as well. So there are people that want to develop the Gaelic language provision more in Edinburgh. Now, my understanding is a degree of the funding that would allow the Bonnington site to be developed would actually come from the Scottish Government from that. So it's not actually taking money away from local provision. But it does come down to very, very difficult choices. I mean, we had a submission again in from secondary school teachers that say that we need to have a serious look at closing more schools in Edinburgh. Now, you can bet your bottom dollar that if any political party went down that road again after the decisions that the council did take on that we would have another bout of emails in, understandably concerned about the impact that would have. So, you know, when it comes to something like this, there is no easy answer. We will have to defend our record both as a council and as a government in May, and people will be unhappy with some of the decisions that have been taken because they felt that the money should be better spent. And I think all we can do as politicians is say that we took the best decisions that that we could at that time, and recognise that people will not sometimes share the priorities that we had. It is one of those situations, I think, with the Gaelic language that, you know, I think the council will be damned if they do and the damned if they don't, because there is a bad news story to be made out of it.
Whatever happens.
Yeah, if you want to see it. It's one of those difficult areas.
You can never...
People are extraordinarily passionate about it. You know, they're talking about their child's education. So, you know, I can fully understand why this is one of the subjects that I get the most emails about when it comes to budget time, because people care about it so much.
And I think because, you know, going back to say the private education is another issue, but I think as well for those of us who've put our faith in the state education system, because, you know, that's what we believe in, and, and, you know, I personally feel very passionately about it, and I think the whole issue of the class divide, or you know, there is going to be greater divisions, because people are going to think, oh, should I have sent my child to a private school? Would they have got a better education? I personally believe that we should defend the state system as much as we can, but I think at the times that we're going through at the moment, I appreciate it is difficult for everybody, and particularly for the local authorities.
As you know, Edinburgh is just so unique in Scotland to have such an enormously large proportion of its children going to private education. Now, for those parents that have taken that decision, that is their right. They are entitled to do so if that's the best that they think that their child can have. Personally, my child will be starting in a council nursery soon, and she's looking forward to it because she knows that it's a well-run place. So, you know, parents make decisions for what they believe are best, and you know, I'm not going to sit and criticise anyone that puts their child in a different education to what I'm choosing, but I think you're right that it does have implications for how the city deals with education.
And I don't think any of us would like to see that divide growing even more. And, you know, I'm the first to defend the state system, and that's what I've chosen, you know, for my children, but I just think it's difficult times for everybody, and I do feel for the current younger generation, you know, in terms of primary and secondary education. It's obviously the issues involved in higher education as well. Difficult times. Looking ahead to May, Shirley-Ann, if the SNP do form another minority government, presumably you'll be trying again for a referendum on independence. Now, given the nature of the concessions for the budget to be voted through yesterday, presumably there'll have to be further bargaining. Should SNP voters feel uncomfortable with this constant bargaining?
We are in a position where, you know, whether it's budgets or anything else for that matter, if you're a minority government, you need to find a majority in Parliament that will allow you to pass your legislation. You know, it's a simple fact of life of being a minority government that we could not find enough people in Parliament to allow us to have that referendum this time round. I hope that will change next time, because what we're asking is not that the Parliament supports independence. I appreciate that the political parties vehemently opposed to that. But surely we can all believe in the idea of the people having a choice. Now, the First Minister has made it clear that there could be other options on the ballot paper for more powers for the Scottish Parliament, which would tie into what Labour and the Liberal Democrats claimed that they wanted to happen. Now the Tories are coming on board with the idea of more powers as well. So there are obviously going to be ways that you have to work together to get something passed. It's the way of things when you don't have a majority. Yeah. There is a majority of opinion in this Parliament that believes surely in democracy, that believes in allowing the people to have their say, and then people can go and campaign however they want. And I think it's particularly rich that the party's blocked the SNP's call for a referendum when you have the Tories and the Liberal Democrats now having a referendum on an alternative voting system, which neither of them actually support, but we're going to have a referendum on it anyway, and which was actually in the Labour Party's manifesto that they were going to have a referendum on it. So you've got every other member of the Scottish Parliament who come from parties who believe in a referendum for a voting system they don't want, but for some reason don't think we should have a referendum on Scotland's future. That seems a tad hypocritical to me, and I hope that can change when we get a new Parliament. People can take a step back and look at this afresh.
Right, you mentioned your children earlier, and I know you have two young daughters. Now, on your parliamentary podcast, you do discuss the challenges of combining family life and being an MSP. And as a mum myself, I'm particularly intrigued to know how on earth you managed to fit it all in. How family friendly is the Scottish Parliament in reality? I mean, you said on your podcast it's not a 9-to-5 job. There's long hours, evenings and weekends goes to the territory. How do you manage to juggle it all and stay sane?
Well, I'm not sure I am actually, but I think I have something which all mums do, which is a guilt that you go to work and you leave your children, the childcare. I think there's just a guilt that comes with motherhood that I'm learning to accept.
never goes away.
No, it never goes away. I was hoping it did, but it doesn't seem to. And it's something which just isn't, an MSP's pot. There are working women throughout Edinburgh that will be going through exactly the same problems as I am, maybe trying to balance 2-3 jobs to try and make ends meet or whatever. So I am in no way in a unique situation on this, and I'm fortunate enough to be in a well-paid job to allow me the childcare support. One, I couldn't do it without Granny. I can't praise Grannies enough for it, because when I am told that I'm staying late in Parliament, it's Granny that comes to the rescue to pick my daughter up at nursery. A supportive family for me is key, but it's not a 9-to-5 job. I was called out late. I had a very long day on Monday. I was supposed to be coming home at a reasonable time on Tuesday to have dinner with the kids, and ended up being called to Bute House, and I'm afraid that's a call that you don't turn down. So I went and I did that, and I managed to get home just in time for bath time. And these things just happen. But it's not unique to MSPs. I think working mums and dads, to be fair, have that challenge all the time. I do have to say no to things that I would love to go to, because I have Sundays that are my sacrosanct family time. And if it means I'm not in the constituency and I miss something, well, so be it, I'll take the hit. And there is a particular grounding, though, about having young children that I love my job. I think it's the most fun I've ever had, but it's such an honour to be an MSP. But I also just like going home, and no matter what you've done, no matter if you've been on the TV or not, you come home and your child doesn't know what you've been up to, and you just go back down to their level. You know, as far as my daughter's concerned, I have a job where I press buttons. That's how my 2.5-year-old views my job. When I go in, she says, "Are you going in to press buttons today?" Vote, press buttons. That's my work. And that fairly brings you down from any delusions of grandeur that you have as you get on to play with the kids.
Maybe she thinks you work at Leith FM because we press a lot of buttons.
Yes.
we push a lot of buttons as well.
People who press buttons as their job, so it's not too bad.
Okay, Shirley Ann, thank you very much for phoning us up today and speaking to the listeners of Leith FM. And we hope to speak to you again as we cover the election going up today.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.